Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. It's a big, big week. It cannot be overstated. Huge week here at the organization for this weekend, not only because it's a battle of two undefeated teams this late in the year, but for the Ring of Fame unveiling, induction of Mr. Pat Bowlen, the team's owner. Here on Friday, Dick Ebersol and NBC's crew and were here to do production meetings, and Dick Ebersol is a guy who knows the impact of Mr. Bowlen very well, because this game on Sunday Night Football is reflective of his impact, not only just outside of Englewood, Colorado.
Yes, and actually the Bowlen family invited Dick Ebersol to come in for the weekend and for the induction ceremony. And the reason why Sunday Night Football has become the primary game, the big game of the weekend, no offense to Monday Night, because Monday Night still is a big thing, but why Sunday Night's become the big thing, it was really Pat Bowlen's idea and kind of helping get NBC back to covering the NFL. Of course, NBC did not cover the NFL from 1998 through 2005 after losing the AFC contract that they'd held for a long time to CBS. And, Sunday Night Football, and flexible scheduling that's gotten some really good matchups into the late season that wouldn't have been in primetime otherwise, that's a small part of Pat Bowlen's legacy, not only to the Broncos, but to the National Football League. And frankly, that's one of the reasons why this game was chosen as the weekend for the Ring of Fame induction of Pat Bowlen, because of his role in creating Sunday Night Football. And it was interesting just thinking about Pat Bowlen's legacy and talking with Joe Ellis about this on Thursday. And you can read that conversation on DenverBroncos.com right now. You look at what the NFL is today, I was thinking about this on an average October weekend, and you had Thursday Night Football on the NFL Network. The NFL Network was another concept that Pat Bowlen championed. And there was the 7:30 a.m. Mountain Time game to start the day on Yahoo between the Bills and Jaguars. Mm-hmm. Bowlen was big on going overseas. The Broncos went to London, to Barcelona, to Berlin, to Sydney, to Tokyo, et cetera. Of course, it would have been interesting to see how Mr. Bowlen would have, felt what he would think of actually watching it over the internet, having that be the only option. But he was always on the forefront of things, and I think he would have appreciated that. And then, Sunday Night Football. It was another big Sunday Night game last week between the Panthers and the Eagles, and that was part of his legacy as well. Even though Pat Bowlen's no longer involved with the Broncos on a day-to-day basis and will probably not be at any of the events saluting his induction to the Ring of Fame as he struggles and continues to fight with Alzheimer's disease, but his fingerprints are all over what the NFL is today.
And they're all over what the Broncos are today. This team, the way the team is run, it all goes back to him since he bought the team in 1984. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows the statistics. Over 300 wins, more Super Bowl appearances than losing seasons. Joe Ellis, the CEO, said that was probably the statistic that most kind of evokes what Mr. Bowlen has done. Mm-hmm. So, this weekend is just going to be a lot of bringing back those memories ever since he took ownership. The 97 Super Bowl team is going to be in town. A lot of alumni are going to be in town. You asked Rod Smith about the impact Mr. Bowlen's had on him, and he said he couldn't really play for another owner. The way Pat Bowlen is, mm-hmm. the way he treats people is just rare, I guess.
And the success is just an outgrowth of that. Players want to play here. Players talk around the league, and they talk about their experiences with different teams. And I can't tell you over the years the number of guys who have told me that the place that treated them the best in their career, if they bounced from one team to another, but they always really felt fondly about Denver and how the Broncos treated them, and that's still the case. It's really cool to see, and it shows that Denver's still an attractive place for a lot of guys to come and spend their careers. And Pat Bowlen's influence is still felt throughout the organization. I mean, remember, he's still the owner, even though he's not here on a day-to-day basis. It's still his team. Every win the Broncos get, it's another one on his ledger. Now he's in his 32nd season as owner. So, I mean, certainly they have a lot of motivations week to week, and then in going for the Super Bowl hopefully this winter. But I think winning another one for Pat Bowlen's pretty high on their list right now.
Hopefully this starts some steam in his campaign for the Hall of Fame. A lot of people have talked about his candidacy. I don't know. I guess one of the things that comes to my mind is back when I had a Sports Illustrated subscription when I was growing up, they always had the polls about where they asked, you know, anonymous polls to all the players in the league and to vote on, you know, what team would you most want to play for and what ownership would you most want to play for. And he always came up pretty highly, highly regarded in those polls. So that always speaks volumes. I mean, and this goes back to a couple years ago, when Brandon Marshall, current middle linebacker, was deciding where he was going to move on from Jacksonville to. And he chose between the Broncos and the Raiders. And former nose tackle Terrence Knighton said, you should come here. So, I mean, impact still being felt. Treat your players well, then they'll appreciate it and want to come play here.
And the other thing is that, you know, something that interesting Joe Ellis said yesterday that, didn't really believe in rebuilding, believed in retooling, that you didn't have to have that full-on strip down and rebuild. And certainly that's borne itself out. You know, this team had some struggles for a few years from 2006 to 2010, no playoff appearances. They had no winning seasons from 2007 to 2011, although the last one of those they did win the AFC West at 8-8. You know, so there was a down period, but they bounced back pretty quickly. And certainly, you look at how the team recovered from going 4-12 in 2010, second worst record in the league, just a disaster of a season in pretty much every regard. And 12 months later, not only were they back in the playoffs, but they won a wild card game. And to segue into tonight, that wild card game, of course, was the last time that the Broncos wore blue jerseys with white pants, the white pants with the orange stripes down the side, because that was their primary uniform from 1997 to 2011 before they brought the orange in as the primary jersey. And we're going to see that again because that was the uniform they wore in Super Bowl 32. And that's another aspect of this game that's really special, is that the 1997 world champions are, you know, a lot of them are coming back for a reunion this weekend, in part to honor Pat Bowlen and in part because it's the Packers. It's the team they beat in Super Bowl 32. It's just a good time to get together.
If you want to see that, they're going to be honoring them pregame, I believe, on Sunday. And with Super Bowl 50 coming up, this has been a year for the NFL as a whole to recognize all the Super Bowls that have come before it. So this is the one that we've been lucky enough to have on our schedule, because the other one is Atlanta, and we won't see them until next year.
Yeah, but they'll come to Denver. So it's possible that they could do the same thing for the 1998 World Champions and bring them back for when that opponent comes to Sports Authority Field at Mile High.
They could. Moving into this game coming up, I mean, it's been noted about why this game is so special with two 6-0 teams. It's only happened four times previously that two 6-0 or better teams have gone against each other. No one can forget that battle between the Akron and someone else that ended up at 0-0 back in the early stages of pro football. But the last time before this also involved Peyton Manning. And he'll get another shot at this one after I think they fell to the Patriots in 2007, I want to say.
And it's possible if the Panthers win this weekend as well, that the Broncos need to win to win this game to make sure that there's not a fifth game, because if the Panthers and Packers win this weekend, they will both be 7-0 when they meet the following week. So it's up to the Broncos to make sure that this kind of matchup stays relatively rare.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers gets so much of the notoriety, or I don't want to say notoriety. He gets so much of
acclaim.
Of the credit. Acclaim. Yes.
Because notoriety has a negative connotation. Notoriety, notorious.
Yeah.
So.
Well, he gets a lot of the credit for why Green Bay has done so well, why they're undefeated right now, especially after Jordy Nelson went down with his ACL tear. But, I mean, their defense is probably right there with it for the reason why they're doing so well. They get a lot of pressure on opposing quarterbacks. They also have an oldie but goodie at outside linebacker with Julius Peppers, who we're both very fond of and aware of.
Yes, we have to get some kind of Panthers connection into this podcast.
We have to agitate our listeners
a little bit. Yes, being former Charlotte residents. And he's playing as well as ever. He's actually on pace to match his career high in sacks they set back in 08 with the Panthers. It's impressive. I mean, now, granted, he's a physical specimen. He's shown that since he was in college when he was a standout for a North Carolina team that went to the Final Four back in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Two-sport star in Chapel Hill. Can't coach those long arms, those long limbs. Can't coach that speed. He's got multiple pass rush moves. And I think the other thing, he played most of his career as a 4-3 end with mm-hmm. his hand in the dirt. And I think being in the 3-4 as he's been in Green Bay as an outside linebacker has rejuvenated him a bit.
Didn't he want to play 3-4 linebacker?
He always kind of dreamed of playing 3-4 outside linebacker. He would even say back when he was in Carolina, yeah, that'd be kind of cool to do. And as DeMarcus Ware can attest, of course, Ware played most of his career in the 3-4, but also saw some 4-3 time both in Dallas and here last year. And Ware said, you know, the 3-4 is good for me at this stage of my career because there's a little less contact, a little less banging around. You know, it's more one-on-one. You're not going inside. Mm-hmm. And it was better for him, and he felt it was better for him as he got into the later stages of his career. And we've seen the same thing with Julius Peppers as well. A little less contact, a little less banging around. It's preserving him a bit. And there he is up among the NFL's sack leaders once again, still making plays. And, you know, with him on one side, with Clay Matthews on the other side, you know, a pair of outside linebackers that doesn't have the exact same skill set as the Broncos' outside backers, but is still right there in that elite class.
They might also get back B.J. Raji.
Show me how to Raji.
Their hulking nose tackle on a defensive line that gets it done. And, you know, Raji could be a run-stopping force for them. If he does come back, he is listed as questionable for the game. But they also have some pretty good defensive tackle in Mike Daniels, who's been mm-hmm. playing exceptionally well. Highest-rated player on their defense by Pro Football Focus. I mean, they can do it all with this defense. They're not getting a lot of shine, mm-hmm. but they could pose some serious issues as this Broncos offense tries to retool after a bye week, get some things sorted out after squeaking one out in Cleveland that had a couple of interceptions, as you noted during media the other day, mm-hmm. especially to linebackers underneath.
Yes.
What do you think they have to do to stop making those mistakes?
Well, you've got to create situations where the linebackers aren't dropping into short coverage more often, and that means you want to stretch the field horizontally and vertically. You look at where a fair amount of those interceptions are coming inside the numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not quite. You know, they're not outside. They're not outside toward the sideline for the most part. They're inside the numbers. That's where the linebackers are involved. Maybe you want to make, if you're going to get the ball to the running backs like Ronnie Hillman, or the pass was behind him that was intercepted and returned for a touchdown by Carl Stansby. What you want to do, maybe you want to get that play a little bit more outside than it was. You know, you get it closer to the side, get it closer to the sideline, and then also make sure that Peyton Manning places the ball to where only the intended target can get it. That's a concern as well. There's a lot that goes into it. You know, certainly it's not interception related, but there's drop passes, the receipt that the targets would like to have back. But you've got to stretch the field all around, keep the linebackers from settling in that short zone, force them to cover more of the field, and then I think you're going to take away the threat of those linebacker interceptions, of which there's been four in the past 3 weeks, which is pretty unusual considering that only about 19-20% of all interceptions this year are made by linebackers.
Then the other big news out of this week is with the offensive line, as it is every week. Right tackle will be sticking with Michael Schofield. That is quite the nugget, I thought, this week.
Interesting, but not surprising for a couple of reasons. First of all, as we would learn on Friday, Tyson Brailo's doubtful. So if he doesn't play, that's Ryan Harris and Tyler Palumbus at left tackle, just like it's been the last few games. But secondly, it just shows you where Gary Kubiak wants to go long-term with this offensive line. As he said during the preseason, if you hit on these young guys and you make a cohesive unit out of them, you've got a chance to be good and set for a long time. And Michael Schofield, he's only in the second year of his contract. He's still learning. I thought he played his best game against Cleveland. Obviously, it's a little bit of a different challenge, a sterner challenge going up against Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers on the outside when he's facing those two in the pass rush. But, you know, he's getting better from week to week. Sometimes with these guys, you don't find out what they can do until they get thrown in and get actual game repetitions. I mean, another position, you can say that about Brock Osweiler. You can make all the projections you want. You don't know what he's going to be until he gets out there in the game reps and you can see what he can do. With Michael Schofield, there's been some hiccups. He allowed a sack in each of his first two starts. Did not allow a sack in Cleveland, as the Broncos as a whole didn't allow any sacks to the Browns. So he's making progress. They've seen growth from him, and now they want to see what he can do next. What are the next steps he's going to take? One thing I liked hearing from Schofield on Thursday, he said he notices that he's improving in one area, in at least one area of his game every week. He talked about pass protection against Cleveland being the area in which he took a leap, and that's great. That's great timing because the Broncos are going to need the best they can get from their edge protectors this week.
And you're right. He did play his best game. Pro Football Focus rated him at above, positively, 0.6 after bouncing back from a poor game against Oakland that ranked him at -1.8. But they rated him at a pretty good rating in pass blocking, especially. As far as how young this line is with him, it would be Cimbrello, a rookie. Obviously, you have your two pillars in the left guard, right guard, Mathis and Vasquez, and then center. You have a first-year guy. And then
Schofield is a first-year starter. He's like Paredes is. So you'd have three guys who had never started before this season. And well, that's a lot of youth. But if they improve, you're going to be in very good shape, certainly. And you know, when in doubt, I often say that if you have two players who are of equal talent, equal ability, you go with the younger guy. Because you're going with upside. You're saying, okay, this guy is probably going to have a chance at getting better, whereas an older veteran, you know what he is. So they've got a good. Once they get Cimbrello back, I think they'll have a very good mix. And then don't forget, with Cimbrello, because of the shoulder injury, even when he gets back out there, I don't think he's going to be playing every snap. And in fact, they may watch his reps a bit. So you're still going to see plenty of Ryan Harrison there as well. And that also can help Ryan Harris because he got some relief from Tyler Palumbus, pardon me, in the Oakland game, and you know he's been listed on the injury report with a knee injury himself. So you know they want to watch his reps too, make sure he stays healthy.
And we have to talk about Aaron Rodgers though. As much as we want to give the defense its rightful acclaim, Aaron Rodgers is the reason why their offense goes. He's as talented as a quarterback that. You could argue is in the league. I would probably agree with that. And one of the reasons why is not just his arms, not just his accuracy, but his feet, because they allow him to string out those plays.
Yes. It's appropriate that he is Mr. Discount Double Check because the way he gets outside of the pass rush and gets outside of the pocket, he forces everyone in the secondary to cover their receivers for about double the length of the time that they would ordinarily, and they break off their routes, and that's when a lot of havoc from the Packers' offense comes. That's the big concern. I think that's the biggest concern for the Broncos this week is, as good as their secondary is, three Pro Bowlers all playing well. Bradley Roby's off to a good start. David Bruton and Darian Stewart have done well in their roles in the defense. They're all going to probably have to work twice as hard on Sunday because of the way Aaron Rodgers can extend plays. And the other thing, you know, it's not going to be as severe on the road for the Packers as it would be back in Lambeau Field, but the hard count from Aaron Rodgers, the ability to draw people offside, you know, and he can do that on the road in Chicago in week one. he elicited 3 offsides penalties from the Bears, but he's over time more effective doing that at Lambeau Field than on the road simply because of crowd noise. So, A, it's incumbent upon the Broncos fans to really bring it. I mean, if you're listening to this, you know, and you've got a little bit of a sore throat, you know, make sure you have some hot tea. Maybe bring some, you know, bring some honey, whatever it takes. You know, bring some lozenges, some Halls, some Ricola, whatever it takes for you to keep that voice at full throttle. They're going to need it. This is a game where the crowd can have a greater impact than any other simply because of how Aaron Rodgers uses the hard count. And if the crowd is loud enough, he's got to go away from that. That's going to help the defense avoid those offsides penalties. But if the defense does get drawn offsides, and I think there'll probably be 1 or 2 over the course of the game. If they avoid them, it'll be remarkable. But if they do, Antonio Smith made a great point this week. He said, you can't stop. And he's a lot of times when opponents get in trouble, is when they get drawn offside and they freeze and they hold up, and you shouldn't do that. You know, on the free play, Rodgers is 6 for 8 for 210 yards and 2 touchdowns when he goes downfield after an offsides penalty on a free play. Almost all of those passes were deep. So 6 for 8 for 210 yards and 2 touchdowns. And of the Packers' 15 pass plays of more than 25 yards, 5 of them were in this situation on free plays. So Smith's point is this. If you're called offsides, you're called offsides. But keep attacking. Keep rushing the passer. Make it difficult because, look, you've already been flagged anyway. You're going to give up 5 yards. That's a heck of a lot better than giving up 45. So keep attacking. And I'll be interested to see if the Broncos take that advice. And remember, Antonio Smith was on the Texans when they played the Packers back in, I believe it was 2012.
Mm-hmm. So, I think so, 2012 or 2011.
2012, yeah. He knows all about how Aaron Rodgers can use that hard count to shred a defense, even on the road, because that game was in Houston. So he understands that, and I'm sure he's going to be telling his teammates. And I'm sure Wade Phillips, who was also there for that game, Bill Kolar, also there for that game, Reggie Herring, they're all going to tell their guys the same thing. If you get called for offside, don't stop. Don't hesitate. Keep going like it's any other play, because you'd rather lose 5 than lose 45.
It is. It'll be a balance, though, I think, because we have seen this defense have some issues with penalties.
But they haven't been offside and neutral zone infractions.
There was Von Miller's one where he hit Alex Smith.
Yeah, they've usually been hits.
Yeah.
That's the thing, though. It's the majority of the penalties that have hurt this defense have been unsportsmanlike conduct, personal foul, and the face mask penalty, of course, on Malik Jackson, mm-hmm. which he claims shouldn't have been a penalty. That was against Cleveland. He told me after the game that wasn't a penalty. I love you, Malik, but I got to disagree with you.
The
hand was up. The hand was up there, man. I think he was maybe thinking of the old designation of 5-yard and 15-yard face masks. Back in the day, that would have been a 5-yard penalty because he didn't actually grab it. He just got his hand up there. But these days,
could have been avoided.
Yes, it could have been avoided. It would have been a 3-and-out. Didn't happen. Kept the drive alive. And that is another thing the Broncos have to avoid. This offense, this quarterback, you cannot give them second chances. Aaron Rodgers will eat you alive. He has that same capacity that Brett Favre had for so long to rip your still beating heart out of his chest and hold it up to you before you die. You don't give a guy like that a second opportunity. So you've got to be careful. You can't make those mistakes of aggression that have really, I think, been the one thing that's held this defense back. Those mistakes of aggression, keeping drives alive. 3 of the touchdown drives they've conceded this year were after 15-yard penalties.
And I think some of those were on third down, which makes it even more painful.
When they had to stop. Yeah.
One of my favorite quotes about the hard count, though, came from DeMarcus Ware, who said he'll have to use his third sense. What is the third sense? Because we have 5 senses. That's sight? I don't know.
Sight? Probably sight, because what you're saying is you're watching the ball. When the crowd gets noisy, instead of listening, you're watching the ball. And what gets people in trouble when What gets defenses in trouble when they're on the road is when you have the quarterback using that hard count, you're going off the sound of his voice. You're going off his cadence. And that's when people jump.
But if when the Packers are on the road and they use a silent count, then it's kind of moot.
Right. Then that's why that sense, you're watching the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You're not bothering to listen, and that can be, and that can play to your advantage in terms of avoiding those offside penalties. And the other thing, Rodgers likes to draw 12 men on the field penalties.
Does that quite often.
That's another thing you have to watch for
this
against
these
guys. This
defense loves to substitute.
Yes, and you wonder if they're going to look at, if they're going to go with the same person, try to go with the same personnel for most of it for most of a series. Like they see what the Packers are lining up in, and they respond in kind, and they keep that personnel out there for the entire series to avoid those penalties that happen when Aaron Rodgers catches a team trying to substitute. He's done that very well, and that's another opportunity for free plays too. And he hasn't succeeded on that yet, but he's taken some deep shots when too many men were on the field. So you got to be careful for that too.
What have you made of the Packers wide receiver core without Jordy Nelson? James Jones and Randall Cobb making up in his absence.
Yeah, and they'll get Devontae Adams back this week too. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to deal with. I mean, look, the quarterback makes the receivers to some degree in Green Bay, and that's how come they can bring James Jones in off the street after he's cut by the Giants. And obviously, they know him from the past years that he spent there before he went to the Raiders. But they bring James Jones in, and he's been terrific for them. And it reminds me of Matt Flynn, Aaron Rodgers' mm-hmm. backup for a few years, and how he went to Seattle and went to Oakland and did Bupkus. And then he goes back to Green Bay and turns their season around in 2013 until Aaron Rodgers can get back and save them at the end and get them to a division title. Some guys are just perfect fits for the scheme, but I think a lot of it is Aaron Rodgers setting them up. That being said, Randall Cobb on the inside, when they put him in the slot, he's as deadly a receiver as there is in the game. I'm looking forward to seeing Chris Harris Jr., what he can do against Randall Cobb. This is probably the biggest challenge he's going to have this year.
James Jones, on the other hand, is their deeper threat. He averages 20.2 yards per reception, so it'll be, you have to watch out for him on the edges, probably against Aqib Talib if you want to put Chris Harris on Cobb. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting. I mean,
very.
The Broncos are not going to face, well, I don't want to say this. Between Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, these are probably going to be the toughest quarterbacks the Broncos face this year. So whether Chris Harris Jr.'s streak of no touchdowns continues, this will probably be one of the tougher tests for him.
Yeah, it's lots of tough tests in the next 10 games. And yeah, I think that leads to the skepticism about the Broncos. They look at the quality of teams they played in the first six or the lack thereof.
Yeah.
And then you look at what's lurking now. This month, you have the Packers and the Colts. Yes, they're struggling, but that's in Indianapolis. It's going to be a tough game. It's going to be an emotional game. And then New England at the end of the month. And then you get to December, and you've got a very tough trip to Pittsburgh. You figure Ben Roethlisberger will be back by then and rolling by then, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And then right after that, Cincinnati comes in, not to mention bunch of divisional games. San Diego twice in the last 5 weeks of the season.
We're getting a little bit healthier.
Yeah, and the improving Raiders come in what could be a very interesting AFC West game.
Yeah, that was impressive how they beat
in week 14.
San Diego.
You know what was not only impressive, but if you're a Broncos fan, one element looked very familiar. Derek Carr to Amari Cooper on the bubble screen, mm-hmm. and my goodness, the Chargers had absolutely no answer for it. I was talking with CJ Anderson this week about that. He's like, yeah, that's like our offense last year in 2013 when you'd run the bubble screen to Demaryius Thomas, and it hasn't worked this year. It's kind of it hasn't been effective, but the Raiders are showing it can still work.
Yet.
I admire your optimism.
It comes and goes.
We'll see.
Do you have a pick for this weekend? If we want to go there?
Actually, I think the Broncos are going to win this game.
Mm-hmm.
Let's note this. Green Bay and Denver are both 6-0. Packers have two wins by more than one score. The Broncos have one. Packers have played a slightly tougher schedule by one game, in terms of the collective record of the opponents than the Broncos. And furthermore, the Packers have 4 wins at home in the friendly confines of Lambeau Field. The Broncos have 4 wins on the road. That is significant in the short and long term. The short term, again, I think, because it is tough to win on the road in this league, no matter who you're playing. And the long term, if you go through NFL history in the Super Bowl era, there have been 13 previous teams that started 5-1 or 6-0 and had 4 road wins among the victories that they had. 8 of them went to the Super Bowl, 8 out of 13. 4 of them won it all. Just saying.
Did they all go to the playoffs?
No.
No?
I don't believe so.
Was there one that didn't?
I think one, well, wait. You know what? Actually, I think they all did go to the playoffs. There were some 4-2 teams that had 4 wins on the road and then 2 losses at home that missed the playoffs. I think one of them was the 2007 Carolina Panthers.
I don't want to rehash that team.
That was the David Carr year.
He had a glove thing too.
Yes,
that
he
was
did.
That was a glove. There's a lot of talk about gloves. I've come to realize here in Denver.
Yeah, I noticed someone was tweeting out at practice this week. Hey, Peyton Manning's wearing the glove.
Didn't he ask people to not ask him that anymore?
Yes. I think he's sick of it.
I think he's done with it.
Yeah, okay, fine. And I agree not to ask about it. It's been beaten into the ground, buried 10 feet below the earth.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, when warm-ups start on Sunday, I'm going to tweet out, Peyton Manning, glove or no glove. People want to know.
People do want to know. Trying to think if there's anything else about this game that needs to be covered. Is there anything that comes to your mind?
Former University of Colorado place kicker Mason Crosby coming back to the Centennial State.
A warm welcome awaits him, I'm sure.
Yes. He has a good first name.
Oh, yeah. Very funny. Halloween is also the day before.
Yes.
I haven't really paid attention to games that are on Halloween. Do they let people dress up for those?
Like in the stands?
Yeah.
Well, based on, if you go,
well, I mean, I see
if you go to Oakland, if you go to Oakland, every game is Halloween.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, there are some. You know, I mean, there's the leprechaun guy. I mean, he dresses up every game.
Did you like Evan Mathis's Halloween costume?
Oh my gosh.
He was Randy Macho Man. Oh.
Art thou bored? Snip into a Slim Jim.
he gave us a little bit of an impression while we were waiting to interview Chris Collinsworth.
Yes.
After production meetings, and he was sitting out there, and he gave us a little bit of a taste of his Randy Savage.
It's hard to do a Randy Savage without. I mean, actually, it makes my throat sore a little bit to talk like, oh yeah,
oh yeah.
Turn to spies. My favorite. See, that's the thing. I love the Slim. I'm not a big pro wrestling fan, but I love the mid '90s Slim Jim commercial where
they're doing
Romeo and Juliet, and you know that you've got the theater, the high school theater. Again, please. Again. And then he bursts out from the balcony. Art thou bored? Step into a Slim Jim.
I love the promos about Miss Elizabeth and Hulk Hogan. God, those are ridiculous.
Oh man,
our boss does a really good Randy Savage.
Yes, he does.
It's kind of scary good. It's pretty incredible.
I need someone to do a Ric Flair, Nature Boy.
Woo!
The Pride of Charlotte, North Carolina.
Not anymore.
He moved.
Well, not that.
Well, I know that he spoke to the 49ers before the Panthers 49er playoff game, so they no longer use him on the video board at Panthers
games.
He's done.
He's dead to Carolinians.
Did they keep him at the Hurricanes games up in Raleigh or no?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think I saw him do one for a Bobcats or Hornets game once. But, yeah. You know, I served him at Moe's restaurant once. That's a little.
Did you say welcome
chain.
To Moe's to?
Oh, for sure I did.
Ric Flair.
I was like 16 or 17, so I was like, oh my god. I didn't get to make his food though. I was a little sad about that.
There's a lot of celebrity sightings at the Dilworth Moe's.
I did make Jay Billis's burrito once.
Yeah.
So I got that going for me.
Ben Swanson's brushes with celebrity.
I proceeded to talk to him about basketball, and I was talking about a game that actually wasn't happening for like another week. Oh. So it was like a few games away. I was like, yeah, so how about the Bobcats Heat game coming up, huh? He was probably just like, what are you talking about?
He's too busy trying to save college athletics.
I have a pattern of embarrassing myself in front of big name people.
Yeah.
In front of little name people too. This goes out to the podcasters.
Yeah. I think we've embarrassed ourselves enough for this podcast. What do you think?
I think so.
All right.
Friday. Let's go home. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on a week.